Oh, hey, it's me, your mom's favorite son, Dave Hill here. And this week on The Novelizers, Oscar-winning actor J.K. Simmons, from Full Frontal with Sam B., Mike Drucker, plus from The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon, Arthur Meyer. I hate how good this episode is. It enrages me.
Welcome to The Novelizers, and today's episode is so good, someone should probably be getting paid for it.
Yeah, like it's, us.
And like us.
But why not someone support the Patreon? Come on. Everyone sees how well-dressed we are and thinks, well, those guys don't need money. But you couldn't be more wrong about that.
Not more wrong. This shirt was thrifted. This is crazy. You're not going to believe what I'm about to lay on you, Dave.
Oh,
but
man.
J.K.
What?
Simmons is our narrator. How did we get him?
Blackmail, honestly.
Blackmail. It might be. I have no idea. J.K. Simmons is an award-winning actor known for Whiplash.
Oscar-winning. La La you make Land. It sound like he won a trophy down at, you know, at the school cafeteria or something.
All right, you do it.
No, he's an Oscar winner. You can keep going, but just say it.
J.K. Simmons is an Oscar-winning
better
actor known for Whiplash, La La Land, Juno, tons of other great stuff. And he played Commissioner Gordon in Justice League.
I was going to do that, but then I didn't feel like it. Mike Drucker is a comedian and writer known for Bill Nye Saves the World, Adam Ruins Everything, Full Frontal with Sam B. Yes, I've been on that show. I know you're going to ask me, Steven, stop it. And also The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. He's also the author of the book Good Game, No Rematch, A Life Made of Video Games. We've also got Arthur Meyer, who's a comedian, writer, and actor known for The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. And he's also the co-host of ABC Parenting.
Hilarious guy.
I want to be the co-host of ABC Parenting.
Talk to Arthur Meyer.
Thinking about it.
So, Dave, where are we in The Dark Knight?
I'm glad you asked, Stephen Levinson. This time around, Rachel interrogates Lau, who agrees to give some information on his clients. The police arrest a large group of mobsters. The mayor warns Harvey that his life will be in danger. And as if all that's not enough, the Joker publicly hangs one of the Batman copycats. Ouch.
The Joker's an asshole. They should just call
Thank
him
you.
The asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. His jokes aren't funny. He's just a
he
dick.
He is.
Get rid of that guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, J.K. Simmons. Novelize us.
How'd you get J.K. Simmons?
The Novelizers presents The Dark Knight. Chapter 8. Batman Wrote Me a Note. Wow. Novelized by Mike Drucker. Narrated by J.K. Simmons. When the officer knocked on my door, marked Police Lieutenant James Gordon, because that's me, Police Lieutenant James Gordon, I was relieved. I'd been eating a sad, pathetic breakfast from a national chain whose entire deal was, in fact, breakfast. Hell, I can't think of one goddamn ad I've seen where they weren't pushing breakfast. But yet here I was, holding something that might have once been a bagel in high school, covered in a white sludge that had the word cream cheese whispered at it once through a metal grate. This sandwich was like this city, a bright promise never fulfilled, the only result being broken dreams and dirty hands. "Lieutenant," called the officer, whose name I forgot even though we've worked together for a few years now, so I was kind of past the point of asking. "You're going to want to see this." The officer said it was right outside, which was good because right outside was my favorite place to be, other than right inside. The building was swarming with laughing cops. Maybe this was what that one officer was talking about. God, I remember his wife said she's a personal chef or maybe a personal trainer, but what was his name? I saw what the joviality was all about. On the steps of the station was Lau, an infamous mobster who only did business via heavy old CRT televisions. He was much thinner in person and yet looked more three-dimensional than on screen. Around Lau's neck was a note. "Please deliver to Lieutenant Gordon," with my name in all caps, which, I won't lie, made me feel pretty good. I put my hands on my hips. Batman, you son of a bitch. You've done it again. You might have piss-poor handwriting, but when it comes to extraditing wealthy gangsters through mysterious military technology, you're at the top of my list. I told the boys to take Lau inside and to be gentle. This was a serious case involving some powerful people, and also I didn't want that note from Batman getting messed up when I just knew I could flip it on eBay in a few years after retirement. An hour later, I stood next to Harvey Dent behind a two-way mirror watching Rachel Dawes speak with Lau and his lawyer. I would have gone in myself, but after that rancid breakfast, I needed a quick exit in case I had to drop the kids off at the pool, if you know what I mean. Rachel offered a deal if Lau gave us the money, and I was really hoping that the us she meant stopped at me, her, and Harvey. Lau, however, replied that the money itself is what kept him alive. Rachel stood up. She was so tall. It was kind of crazy how tall she was, like watching a praying mantis unfold itself, and you realize that nature has more mysteries than stars in the firmament. Oh, you mean when they find out you helped us, they're going to kill you? His wet to the point of moist lawyer asked if that was a threat. I knew this lawyer. He was like Danielle in America's Next Top Model, Cycle 6. He might seem like he's got it down, but judges hate him the moment he opens his mouth. Then again, Danielle won the competition, so I don't know, maybe not the best comparison. Rachel tried again, but Lau held a poker face in a game without cards. She said Lau could enjoy his time in jail, although she didn't really mean it sincerely. Lau said, "I won't give you the money, but I will give you my clients. All of them." This was progress. We could eliminate money as a suspect. I know that sounds crazy, but a few years back we had a guy who was serial killing based on those crappy fake holidays you see online, like National Coffee Mug Day, so you never know where these psychos are at mentally. When Rachel asked what he knew, Lau replied that he was good at calculation. Brag much? Harvey pushed a button and said, "Got it." Then the button screamed, "That was easy!" And we both realized that he had accidentally hit the novelty toy that someone got him from Staples. Harvey Dent said, "Rico," to which I replied, "Polo!" Boy, did I feel like a fish out of water at that mistake. Dent said with his confession we could charge dozens of bad guys at once, which made me hit the button that said, "That was easy!" That afternoon, after a long bathroom break, I walked in as an international rainbow coalition of criminals were watching Harvey Dent's press conference on a flat-screen TV set to stretch the image rather than keep it in its original 4:3 aspect ratio. Before they saw me, I overheard one of the gangsters announce he had hired the Joker to stop Lau and Batman. Oh, how they all jumped when I approached their 8 different overtly shady tables. A criminal asked me if I wanted to really embarrass him, and I felt bad I did, but he and his friends committed a lot of crimes. So, to jail they go. Them's the rules. I don't make 'em. I didn't even know 'em half the time. I mean, hell, I just found out what RICO was. At trial, a judge listed off every charge against a crowd of criminals. Then she saw a Joker card in the middle of her file. Probably a prank from the boys downstairs, who'd never done anything like that before. When she asked how the defendants pleaded, dozens of them began shouting and she asked for order in the court. I could already tell this was going to be a long day for her. After the trial, Harvey and I were called into the mayor's office. We all came in like, "We did it." And he was all like, "I don't like that you did it." And we were all like, "Say what?" And he was all like, "This is going to get thrown out of court." And we were all like, "Nah, this is good." And he was all like, "Okay." And we were all like, "Awesome." We high-fived, and I used the restroom again. Harvey talked to the mayor, but I was already long gone. They both screamed, and I ran in to find a man dressed as Batman with Joker makeup hung and pressed against the window. Now, how did that get there? After they got Batman down, I confirmed it was an imposter, because Batman is alive and this man wasn't. I also found a playing card on his body with the words, "Will the real Batman please stand up?" I'd never seen a playing card deck so specific before, and it made me suspicious it had been tampered with. Later, while we were talking over matcha, Bruce Wayne, the industrialist with cheekbones that could cut glass, said he had seen the incident on the news, including the disturbing video that went along with it. The Joker had made a video before that man died, and perhaps this is how we'd find out who did the crime. The fake Batman in hockey pads, which Batman had explicitly warned against, was tied to a chair in a meat locker. The voice of the Joker asked him his name and if he was the real Batman. He wasn't, which we all knew already. Yeah, doy. The Joker made a pledge. The real Batman must reveal himself or he'd kill one person every day starting tonight. Then the Joker laughed and the camera dropped as the fake Batman screamed. Disturbing, but perhaps good news for us. According to the Joker's own logic, he was only killing one person a day, and thus he'd already hit his quota. We were probably good for another 24 hours. And there was a real big party for Harvey Dent coming up. Safe as can be, fun as can be. That's the Gotham City way.
Wow. Thank you, J.K. Simmons. Amazing as per usual.
Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
From Geico Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. You think you live in a pretty safe place, but you just heard about a break-in 4 miles away, which isn't close, but it isn't far either, you know? Art Palpitations is on the scene.
I sure am, Tammy, and I don't even know why I drove out here, because as you know, you got customized renter's insurance through Geico, so your stuff is covered.
Oh, well, that's great. Any sign of crime there, Art?
Just some light littering, Tammy, but like they say, a little litter can lead to a lot.
Wise words. It feels good to worry less. It feels good to Geico.
The show is not over yet.
No.
Not by a long shot.
Not even close.
Nope. Because each week, we also managed to find someone who worked on the film Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear that interview.
Welcome to the interview portion of The Novelizers. I'm Christine, and today I am so excited to interview this guest. This is Marcus O'Neill, and he was the vocal coach, not to Christian Bale, but to Christian Bale's vocal coach. Did I get that right, Marcus?
Yeah, it's a little complicated, but yeah, you got the math right.
Wow. Okay, so I'm not surprised that there was a vocal coach for Christian Bale. I mean, his voice is so iconic. But to know that there was someone coaching that vocal coach is just fascinating. So tell me a little bit about what you did on the film.
Yeah, well, so I was hired as the vocal coach's vocal coach. The vocal coach showed up to set, and we found out that he had lied on his resume. So they had to hire another vocal coach. So that vocal coach had lied on his resume and said that he had been a vocal coach before, but really he was just a big fan of Batman. So he showed up and they said, "What's your Batman voice?" And he did a voice kind of like this. And I said, "That is not what Batman should sound like. Batman needs to sound intimidating. He needs to sound chilling. And he needs to sound like he maybe is recovering from laryngitis."
And that is exactly what he sounds like in the film. That's amazing. So, okay, so this other vocal coach shows up and he sort of pitches a voice that doesn't sound anything like what we know Batman to be. And then you were then brought in to then coach him.
Yes. That's correct. It's a little bit like Russian nesting dolls, but for vocal coaches, or the movie Inception. It's hard to understand, but I think you're getting it. And
I'm definitely getting it. And thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And the Russian nesting dolls is honestly a perfect metaphor for it because I love
Russian nesting dolls. Do you?
I do. You know what I love about them? I love that like they get a little sticky, but you kind of twist them and it kind of screeches. But you got to find that exact spot where they just match up, you know, and it feels so, it's really fulfilling. So then, okay, in this
metaphor, is
Christian Bale the tiniest nesting doll in the center or is he the big nesting doll on the outside? I guess he would be the little guy in the middle.
That's a good question. He's actually one of the middle nesting dolls.
Oh.
So there's usually about 6 layers of nesting dolls.
Yep.
He's number 4.
Oh my God. Okay. So I am actually so interested to find out who's 5 and 6 then. Who's inside of Christian Bale?
Okay. So inside of Christian Bale, number 5 is his brain.
Yep.
Number 6 is his clothes. Number 3 is his initial vocal coach who lied on his resume. number two is me. So I'm the second smallest Russian nesting doll.
Who's outside of you?
That I don't know yet. I haven't quite figured that out yet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you had a vocal coach, and that would have just really, really floored me.
Well, if you want, I could confess the truth to you. I did have a vocal coach.
Oh, my God. So yes. You had someone coaching you, and you were coaching a coach, and the coach was coaching Christian Bale. Christian Bale,
yes,
inside of him, is his brain. And inside of his brain, did you say, were his clothes?
Yes.
Yep. Explain
that. Well, the clothes is always the outer and biggest layer of the Russian nesting doll. Because, you know, the clothes are outside of you, whereas your voice is inside of you. Does that make sense? Your voice is inside your body, if that makes sense?
Yeah, totally. Because you can't see your voice. It has to come out of you to be experienced. Whereas clothes are just seen.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess I'm still confused why the clothes are the farthest inside layer, but I almost think it could be like a circle of life thing, you know, where like, well, then inside the deepest part are sort of like, that's like the outside layer.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's how I think of it too.
Wow. Okay.
And by the way, I do, as you were saying, love that little screech sound that Russian nesting dolls make when you tighten them. It reminds me a little bit of gym sneakers on a basketball floor. And I love that sound.
My God. So, or yes, on a basketball floor or just new sneakers on a floor where, and that can be embarrassing. If you're in a big room and you have new sneakers and you're screeching, like say you're at like, you know, I don't know, jury duty and you're walking up cause they called your name and it's just like a little screech, screech, screech. It's like super embarrassing. On the gym floor, it feels really cool cause you're being active, you know?
Literally that exact thing happened to me when I went in for jury duty.
No way. Oh my God.
Yes.
Were you and so that's embarrassed?
I was, and that's why the judge didn't put me on the jury, because he was like, you are an embarrassment to the American judicial system.
Did you want to be on the jury?
I did. I love juries.
Why do you
love
juries?
Is that weird? I feel like I'm weird. I feel like I'm weird for loving juries.
I've never been on one. I've always wanted to be, so I hear you. I mean, but like the only jury you want to be on is like the super exciting mass murder, right?
Exactly. Like something that would happen in Batman.
Exactly. Full circle. Okay, let's get back to it. So you get on set, you are hired to coach the vocal coach. You have behind the scenes your own vocal coach, which is, you know, a whole nother story. But how does this vocal coach take to you coaching him?
He didn't like it. We butted heads. We had to have it out, but neither of us know how to fight. So we played the game Connect Four.
Oh my goodness. And did you just have that with you or did one of you order from
Amazon? I did. Okay. I carry around Connect Four with me at all times.
In your briefcase?
Yes, in my briefcase.
So you pull
out
Connect
Four?
I don't know. I do carry around a pocket-size chess game, like a little one, with teeny tiny little pieces. But no, I don't have Connect Four with me when I'm out and about. Well, I absolutely have it in my living room right now, but not when I'm traveling around.
Okay. How tiny are the pieces? Like, could they fit
the chess
inside
pieces?
Yes, like could they fit inside the tiniest Russian nesting doll?
Absolutely. You have to use a pair of tweezers to play the game.
Oh my gosh,
so it comes with
a
tiny little pair of tweezers too that folds out. It's a little folding set of tweezers.
Oh my God, I love that. I love when things are really, really small like that. Like the tiniest Russian nesting doll or tiny chess pieces that you have to put in using a pair of tweezers.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it feels like that is maybe part of the inspiration for your voice coaching of Christian Bale, of the vocal coach, because, you know, his voice is so deep, but I would call it mighty.
No.
It's almost hard to hear him sometimes in the movie.
Yeah, I think so too. Sometimes I think he talks a little bit fast and a little bit clipped. And sometimes you look at it and you're like, dude, like, why is your voice so throaty? And then I remember that, I'm the one who I guess it's sort of on me.
It's on you, on the other vocal coach, right?
Yes.
So exactly. I want to go back to this conversation, or I guess this initial meeting between you and the vocal coach, and obviously you're not totally seeing eye to eye, or maybe he's frustrated that he needs a coach to coach. And so you whip out your travel size Connect Four, and you start playing. Who won? What happened?
Well, we did a best of 17.
Oh, my God. Who picked that number?
That was my idea, frankly. I wanted to do a prime number, and 17 was the first one that popped into my head. I'm weird with numbers.
I thought maybe it was like he won 8 in a row, and then you were like, God, it's got to be best out of 17, because you'd have to win 9 at that point to beat him. And that would have been a real run, you know, 9 in a row.
That is true. That has happened before. That did not happen in this case, but that has happened in the past. But also, in Connect Four circles around the country, best of 17 is also kind of commonly played.
Okay.
So yeah, first one to win 9 wins. And what can I say? He kept getting 3s in a row, or 2s in a row, or 1s in a row, and I was getting Connect Four.
Ah, wow. So you did win. Yeah. You beat him in the 17th, best of 17 Connect Four. And does that mean, okay, submit, I'm going to coach you. Now I beat you, now you have to accept my coaching.
Ding, ding, ding.
Amazing. So what I would love is, could you just give me, I mean, you did his voice so well earlier, which doesn't Thanks. Sound like someone who would be coaching Batman, or at least the Batman that we know, the Christian Bale version of it. So I would love to know, could you just give me sort of a sample dialogue between you and this vocal coach after the Connect Four, when you beat him, you know, best out of 17, and you are telling him, like, this is how this is going to go down now.
Yes. And I could do his voice too, if that helps.
I would love that, please, if possible.
Okay, great. Let me just take a sip of water, because having this voice requires that I drink water pretty much all the time.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, it's good. Stay hydrated. Also, you are your own voice. You have control over your own voice, you know, so.
Exactly. My voice is my instrument. So basically, I had just beat him in game number 17. And I say, Connect Four. And he says, what? That's not four. That's just, you just have 3 in a row. And I go, no, look, 1, 2, 3, 4. And he goes, no, look, 1, 2, 3. And I go, there's 4. And he goes, sorry. And he goes, oh my God, you're right. That is 4. I feel so embarrassed right now. And I go, you should feel embarrassed. You should feel embarrassed. Plus, I'm about to pull your pants down, so you're going to feel even more embarrassed. And I did pull his pants down, and it revealed a pair of boxers with those little hearts on them. It was very cartoonish. And then I said, now that I've wrested you under my control, I will be your vocal coach. Do you submit to my demands? And he said, yes.
And that was it. That was his final line. Yes.
Yes. And this did take place in front of a crowd of about 200 people who were all very confused, some of whom were being bothered because I was farting at the time.
That is without a doubt a harassment. I mean, you pantsed him in front of 200 people. So that's definitely
I don't. I don't know if pantsing is considered harassment. Do you think it is?
Yeah, I think exposing someone against their will would be considered harassment. Yeah, I do.
Even if they have funny hearts on their boxers?
Well, if, you know, here's the thing. If he wore those boxers hoping, wishing, just wanting desperately for someone to pull down his pants so that he could show off those amazing boxers, then no, I don't think that would be harassment. But you would have to know that in advance. To know that it's
consent.
Not harassment. Yes, that is exactly what it is. It's consent. Yeah.
That is great. I just bought a book about consent, and this makes me want to read it. Right now I'm just reading a book about Calvin and Hobbes cartoons, but I think I'm going to open my book about consent and start to read that.
Yeah, you should read it. I mean, look, it does sound like, you know, he said yes, and then he accepted your help, and you had been hired, and he had been hired, so everyone's being paid. Does he start to appreciate the coaching that he was getting from you?
He does. In fact, we became fast friends.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. So I'm going to just assume for my own mental wellness that he did want you to pants him. And it was actually kind of a cool way for him to show off something he was proud of.
I think so. Because we talked about it a week later. I had gotten a shot at being a contestant on Wheel of Fortune. And I asked him if he would want to come with me to be in the audience during the game.
Can you do the dialogue of this conversation?
Yes, I said to him, hey, and I still to this day don't remember his name. Do you?
Oh, gosh, I didn't even know. I know that there were probably multiple vocal coaches, but I'm not sure. But
well, it's so weird because like he and I are really good friends now, but I'm in too deep. And I can't ask him his name because it would be weird.
I know that feeling. So weird.
You know that feeling?
So weird. Yes, if you had to ask a best friend their name, that's so fucking weird. That would be awful.
I know. I feel like I'm in some bad movie.
Yeah. That's... Go ahead.
Well, anyway, so I said, I might be a contestant on Wheel of Fortune. Would you like to come in the audience if I get picked? And he said, yes, oh my God, are you kidding me? I love Wheel of Fortune. And I said, me too. It's a great show, and I don't feel dumber than the contestants like I do when I'm watching Jeopardy. And he said, that's exactly what I like about Wheel of Fortune, too. Anyway, long story short, I appear on Wheel of Fortune. I win. The final puzzle was Bye Bye Birdie. And I won a vacation to Hawaii, which I didn't want to take. But the interesting thing about being on Wheel of Fortune is that they make you go on the vacation whether you want to or not.
Really?
And so what I took him.
Okay. And you took him. And yeah. How was that trip? Did you guys enjoy it? This is after the filming is wrapped, I assume, right?
Yeah, the filming had wrapped by then. The vacation was pretty bad. I don't need to get into it unless you want me to.
I would love for you. Just give me one spicy detail.
Okay. Well, I stole some Lay's from, and I'm not talking about the potato chips. I'm talking about the soft necklaces.
Yeah, made of real flowers.
Made of real flowers. I stole some, got in trouble with the cops. He didn't have enough money to bail me out. I was in jail. Tried to convince them that I was Batman's vocal coach. They said, no, I know that you're not. They looked up the credits on IMDb, and I said, well, I was the vocal coach of the vocal coach.
The vocal coach.
And they said, that's not impressive enough for us to let you out of jail. So I had to do time. And when you steal Lay's in Hawaii, oh, you get 6 days. So I was out after 6 days, yeah, which was the length of our trip. So, yeah.
Oh. And so did he enjoy the trip without you?
Yes.
That's awesome. So, yes. Okay. You've gone on this journey. You've coached the coach. You've gone through the filming. Mm-hmm. You've gone on this vacation. You come back. Are you still working as a vocal coach to vocal coaches?
I'm back to working in a bicycle and sports shop.
Interesting. Okay. And so you've been doing that before vocal coaching?
Well, so I'm sorry. I noticed you maybe kind of laughed a little bit there. I was just wondering what is funny to you about working in a bicycle and sports shop?
Honestly, the reason I laughed is because I hadn't even asked you what you did beforehand. I was laughing at myself for not doing a thorough interview for you.
Oh, good. Okay, because working in a bicycle and sports shop is very serious, not laughing matter.
Not at all. It's also, it's probably really fun and fulfilling, I imagine.
It's not fun. And it's not...
Fulfilling.
It is fulfilling. It's very fulfilling. But there's nothing fun or funny about bike horns. Bike horns are not a laughing matter.
Yeah, but I mean, I would counter with like, you work at a place that is meant for recreation and enjoyment. The whole idea, no one has to be bicycling.
I think some people have to be bicycling.
Are you one of those people?
I am. Ah.
And where anyway, do you I'm bicycle? Sorry.
I bicycle to a competing bicycle and sports shop.
Oh, you bicycle from your shop to another one.
Yes, because quite frankly, the other shop has lower prices.
Oh, so you go, I thought you were going there to like steal secrets, but you're actually going there to just be a patron.
Yes.
Customer. Got it.
Yes.
Listen, I've learned a lot about you, and I don't think I've learned a ton about what you did to coach the vocal coach. Can you just give me an example of how you would coach him to coach Christian Bale?
So I would do different vocal exercises first. So, of course, you do your musical exercises. La 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 la. And then you do the ones that are like seven sheep set in a silk. You would do like things like seven sheep go to sleep in a silly silo.
Okay, or like...
So I make... The, yeah, go ahead.
11 benevolent elephants inexplicably mimicking him, hiccuping while amicably welcoming him in.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that one is great. Do you do these sometimes?
No, I just made that up. I just made that up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yours didn't really work very well, so I thought I would try one.
Yes, mine did not work very well. And unfortunately, it paused. Yeah, not the first time. Well, I write my own.
You got it the second time. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I write my own like, yeah, oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it seems like you'd have to be better at that to be a vocal coach.
You would, yes, you would think so. And yes, that is true. Yes, that is not my forte. Vocal exercises are not my forte.
I just want to get a really full picture of this, like from top to bottom. So you are working in a bicycle and what shop? Adventure shop?
Sports shop.
Bicycle
Which does imply, it's yes, it implies adventure.
You're not having any fun though. It is fulfilling, but it's not fun.
Yes.
And you then somehow are called to set of the film Batman with Christian Bale and The Dark Knight. And you're told to coach the vocal coach. Who found you? How did this even happen?
Well, the director of the movie, who, can you remind me his name? Was it Christopher Nolan?
Nolan, yeah.
Yes, that's right. So he had to come to a bicycle and sports shop to buy a lacrosse stick.
Got it. Okay.
And he's at the register and I'm ringing him up and I say, that'll be $32.95. And he goes, yes. And he goes, what? And I go, that'll be $32.95. And he goes, sorry. And he goes, what? $32.95. And he goes, your voice is exactly what we're looking for the next Batman. Quick, clipped, raspy, kind of hard to understand. Would you be Batman? So he straight up offered me the role of Batman.
Wow.
And I said, well, my acting days are done. Because when I was a kid, I was in The Music Man and I played The Music Man.
As a kid.
And while it was as a kid, and while I was on stage, another kid named Evan Hansen, no relation to the musical, came up to me, not funny, came up to me and pantsed me. Revealing my boxers that I was wearing with tiny hearts on them, which is why I still do that to people sometimes.
And how did you know that that guy was wearing the same boxers? That is my question. And I might never know the answer to that.
I don't know the answer either. It's something cosmic or spiritual, much like the fifth layer of the Russian nesting dolls.
So he asks you to be in the film. He offers you the role. And what do you say?
I say, no thanks.
But and then he says,
I would love to be the vocal coach. And he says, we already have a vocal coach.
Did he say it like that?
Sorry. Excuse me. He said, we already have a vocal coach. And I said, what? And he said, we already have a vocal coach. I was having a little trouble hearing because I had just been to a Soundgarden concert.
He had also been having trouble hearing because he was saying what to you a lot.
Well, yes. So he couldn't understand my voice, which is why he was having trouble hearing. I had gone to a Soundgarden concert the night before, and my ears were still ringing. I was in the road directly in front of the amps.
Oh, I just thought there was ambient noise in the bicycle and sports shop, but you were both having different reasons that you had trouble hearing each other. Okay, so then you say what, and he says, "We already have."
Yes, and I said, "Well, I would love to coach the coach." And he said, that would actually be great because the coach
that
we hired.
Did he say it like that?
Sorry. Excuse me. He said, that would be great because, and by the way, he happens to have the exact same sounding voice.
Exact same voice as the vocal coach.
Yes, which is weird.
So weird.
Yeah.
Because you're really good at voices. Yeah.
Yes. I could do pretty much any voice. But it turns out that Christopher Nolan hired his own twin brother as the vocal coach.
Oh my God. This is all making sense.
It's super fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you should know his name because he's Christian Bale's, he's Christopher Nolan's identical twin brother. So you at least know his last name.
Yes.
Unless he went by some sort of, what's that called? A hidden name, secret name. What's that called? Pseudonym? Nope.
I think it's called alias.
Alias. There we go. Yeah. He could have.
Are you sure? Okay. I thought it was pronounced alias, but I might be.
It could be alias. It could be okay. Alias. I've only ever seen it written. I've never heard it said out loud.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Language is very interesting to me. Sorry, go ahead.
It really is. We could talk about this forever. But unfortunately, we can't. But I just, okay, so you joined the film and do you still have a relationship with the director, with Christopher Nolan after that, after that initial hiring?
I do. We go to Soundgarden concerts together. He's a big SG fan.
But had he been at the concert the night before?
No. which is weird. He didn't know that they were in town. That's a long story, and his kid was in the hospital. It's a whole thing. His kid was in the hospital. He tried to get out of the hospital to go to the concert. It's a whole thing.
Oh, my God. Wow, yeah. That is a super fan if you're trying to leave the hospital where your kid is, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah. And so he missed that, but you guys now go to these concerts together.
Yeah, we basically travel around in a stinky van. And, you know, whenever Soundgarden's on tour, which is about once every 12 years, we just go follow them to the four cities that they play at. And, you know, we just, you know, we love them. We throw our underpants on stage at them. And, yeah, we love Soundgarden.
It's amazing. Yep. Well, it sounds like you... Even though it was your only experience on a film as a vocal coach or a vocal coach to a vocal coach, it sounds like it was a pretty positive experience. You got some good, you got a good credit out of it. You're very good friends with one of the biggest directors in the world. And yes. And then you got to go back to the job that you clearly cared about, not because it's fun, but because it's fulfilling at the bike and sport shop.
Exactly. It's actively not fun, but it is extremely fulfilling.
I love that. I don't even know what that would be like, but I believe you. I believe that is your lived experience there.
Totally. It's a both and. It's a both and.
Listen, Marcus, I'm so grateful to have talked to you. I learned so much about vocal coaching, vocal coaches, and how you can just get a job by just, you know, ringing the right person up at the right time at the sport and bike shop, you know?
You never know when Hollywood calls. You never know. Yeah. Much like Batman receiving a phone call to go onto a case. Sometimes Hollywood calls for you to become a vocal coach a guy who was mishired as a vocal coach who also happens to be the brother of the director of the movie.
And sounds exactly like him, yeah.
Yes.
Fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Marcus. Really appreciate you taking the time. And I'll let you know if I ever know of a vocal coach who is requiring a vocal coach, and we'll pull you back out of the sports shop for a little while.
Oh, I would really love that. And let me just say, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And let me just say, you are good at voices.
I am Marcus.
Thank you, Marcus.
Man, I'm going to need a hot bath after that.
I learned so much about the movies and the way they work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So much.
Well, special thanks to this week's guests, J.K. Simmons, Oscar Award winner, Mike Drucker, Arthur Meyer.
Let's not forget to thank the listener.
Oh, yeah. And you, Dave, let's not forget to thank you.
I know. I don't know why we always forget to thank me. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for hanging out
with you. Thank you. I've had a great time. You know, without this, it would have just been me and the dog. And I'm grateful for this human inner, what we just did.
See you next week.
On the Novelizers.
Novelizers.
We really got to get... you know, money to pay for cool effects like explosions and echo. Maybe like a car speeds by, another car slams on its brakes. I don't know.
Let's do it.
Just something to think about. All the Definitely. Other podcasts have that stuff.
Maybe a needle scratch?
Yeah, yeah, an abrupt needle. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, with Stephen Levinson, and produced by Stephen, Dennis DiClaudio, Cole Emhoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Rob Kuttner, and Marla Radner, and distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Editing and mixing by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emhoff. Theme song by Andrew Lynn, recorded by Knotts. Additional editing by Andrew Lynn and Sunita Haberlein. Special thanks to Brad Combs and Parabolic Studio in Manhattan. Follow the Novelizers on Instagram and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is written and recorded without the use of AI. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025, Novelizers, LLC.
Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.